This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the July 15th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Once again, Grant Blaschka of Audio for the Arts is our engineer. He's producing the show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. This building is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And the Freedom From Religion Foundation does produce this weekly radio show and podcast, Free Thought Radio, one of just many things that FFRF does as the nation's largest association of freethinkers. That's atheists, agnostics, skeptics, whatever you like to call yourself. And we work diligently to keep religion out of government, just like our secular constitution requires. And we'd love to have you join us if you're not already with us at ffrf.org.
My brother Daryl sent me a joke. Actually, it's not a joke, but he sent me a joke that says, COVID is no joke. One former patient was so brain damaged after surviving COVID that he thought he won an election that he actually lost by 7 million votes.
Who could that be?
That's not a joke, by the way. So we're going to have some serious things to talk about on our show today. In the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the 2020 census. Not the official U.S. census, but the new unprecedented 2020 census on religion, which was conducted by PRRI, the Public Religion Research Institute, and that study was just released this month. Our guest will be Robert P. Jones. He's the president of PRRI, whom we've had on this show in the past, and he's going to tell us about their detailed county-by-county survey of religious diversity and also about its connection to critical race theory.
And before we talk with Robert P. Jones, we will hear some irreverent humor from the comedians Robin Williams and Phyllis Diller, whose birthdays we do celebrate this week. And during the breaks on the show, where we often feature the music of freethinking composers and performers, we are actually going to hear some music by my co-host Dan Barker. Last week, I asked Dan, why don't we play some of your piano music sometimes? So he's collected some of the solos from his piano CD, Night at Nakoma, for today's show. We're going to hear Dan playing four freethinking composers: Blue Moon by Richard Rodgers, You Do Something to Me by Cole Porter, The Man I Love by George Gershwin, and All the Things You Are by Jerome Kern. And of course, all these composers were non-believers, and Dan's a non-believer.
So, Annie Laurie said we do an awful lot of things here at FFRF. We actually have two TV shows. We have one that broadcasts, and we have one on Facebook Live. It's called Ask an Atheist. Yesterday on FFRF's Facebook Live on Ask an Atheist, you, Annie Laurie, and FFRF attorney Liz Cavell talked with FFRF's Ann Nicole Gaylor reproductive rights intern, Barbara Alvarez, and also with University of Chicago Law School professor Jeffrey Stone about the growing threat to abortion rights.
That's right. We had two great experts. Barbara started off by telling us about the many anti-abortion bills that have been introduced just this year.
We are only halfway through the year, and already we've seen 561 abortion restrictions and 165 abortion bans introduced across 47 states. Of those bills that have been introduced, 90 have been enacted across 16 states, including 10 abortion bans. And these restrictions and bans, they run the gamut of medically unnecessary restrictions to abortion facilities and providers. And they also include restrictions on who can perform care, misinformation about abortion reversals, and they can require women to make several visits to clinics or just outright deny them healthcare coverage.
That's Barbara Alvarez on that show. And then Professor Jeffrey Stone, who was a clerk for Supreme Court Justice William Brennan during the time Roe v. Wade was decided, he told us some of the history behind that case.
And so they re-argued the case the following fall. And over that summer, Justice Harry Blackmun, who had been on the board of the Mayo Clinic, went up there during the summer and did research about abortion, in particular about the history of abortion through Western civilization and in the United States, and also about the realities of the life for women in having to deal with illegal abortions. And that was still something that most people knew virtually nothing about because abortion was illegal and women were therefore reluctant to say much about that. And so Blackmun came back to the court and explained to the other justices what the reality of the history was about abortion.
So I loved how Professor Jeff Stone kept the focus on the women. And Barbara Alvarez also explains in great depth about the religious war against abortion rights, why it's a secular issue. And so you should watch that show if you haven't seen it on FFRF's Ask an Atheist YouTube playlist. It's on our YouTube channel.
Ask an Atheist is a live show where you can tune in and you can ask questions of the guests during the show. It usually airs at 12 noon Central on FFRF's Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/4FFRF. That's the number 4, 4FFRF.
And speaking of women's rights, this week is the anniversary of the Seneca Falls Convention, the first women's rights convention in the world, which took place on July 19th and 20th in 1848 in Seneca Falls, New York. And many of you know the story of feminist and freethinker Elizabeth Cady Stanton and her four friends, who some of them Quakers, who instituted and convened that convention. And she, Stanton, was the first woman to call for woman suffrage. It was part of the Declaration of Rights and Sentiments adopted at that convention. You can read those those Declaration of Rights and Sentiments at the National Women's Park there at Seneca Falls. And Stanton initially was warned that the plank was too shocking to utter and it would alienate supporters, but she prevailed. Frederick Douglass came to her defense, among others, and that galvanized U.S. women for the next 72 years. And we saw the 100th anniversary of the Woman Suffrage Amendment that was passed in 1920. Last year, we also had a lot of discussion on how long it took far too long for Black Southern women, Native American women, Asian and Pacific Islander women to actually be able to exercise this right. But it was a huge battle. And as Stanton pointed out, in the early days of women's suffrage agitation, I saw that the greatest obstacle we had to overcome was the Bible. It was hurled at us on every side.
You can read more about that and about more Freethought events in Freethought in History and Freethought Birthdays on our website, Freethought of the Day, every day. And if you want, you can sign up for a daily morning email with Freethought news, contemporary and historical.
And of course, you can also read a lot more about Stanton's Freethought views in the anthology of women freethinkers that FFRF published, Women Without Superstition.
That you edited.
That I edited. It's available at our shop.
So you can go to FFRF.org/day to read that or sign up for it. So we have some news. We have some temporarily disappointing news about Texas.
Yeah, actually outright dismaying. Late Friday night at about 8:30, what's the rush? A three-judge panel from the 5th U.S. Circuit ruled that in our case against a praying judge, that he could continue his courtroom prayers while he appeals our victory at the federal court level. So disappointing. And they issued an opinion, and it was written by a judge that clerked for Alito and acted like it, who's worked for Texas Governor Abbott and acted like it. His name is Judge Andrew Oldham. He's a President Trump appointee. And very discouraging and dismaying to read that decision. But the case has not been argued yet. It's going to go probably to a different panel of judges. And we have sued this praying judge because he locks the door of the courtroom during the prayer. If you want to leave, it's very obvious that you're not there. It's very obvious when you come back. He introduces the pastors. They're almost all Christian. It's an absurd and unconstitutional action. It's a misuse of his authority.
He should be happy to know that he is now free to continue insulting non-Christians in his courtroom.
Well, I mean, they're literally a captive audience, and there's no emergency that he has to continue to pray, but he will continue to impose these prayers as our case goes to the Fifth Circuit.
So over in Colorado, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is applauding Colorado lawmakers for allowing survivors of child sexual abuse to pursue justice. Delayed, of course, but hopefully not denied. Often that abuse is not reported until many years later, and the abusers themselves can escape the consequences because of the statute of limitations. Well, earlier this year, Governor Jared Polis signed into law SB 211073, supported by us, to remove this get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, so the problem with that law was that it wasn't proactive, and so they have corrected that, and now the governor has just signed another bill that will give survivors of past abuse a chance for justice through the courts. This is the kind of thing that we need to pass all over the nation where we don't have those state laws, so a bit of good news there.
So over in Georgia, there's this interesting Georgia deputy. We put out a press release that says to this deputy, stop being an outlaw. Don't be caught on the wrong side of constitutional law, our foundation wrote to this Georgia deputy. His name is Jonathan Blackman, and he's been using his position within the Polk County, Georgia Sheriff's Office to promote and endorse his personal religious beliefs. Christian ministries are being brought into the Polk County Jail. They proselytize inmates, and the sheriff's office posts all these religious messages on its official Facebook page.
Yeah, so our press release delineates a series of jail ministry program posts. There's photos of a Latin cross with a crown of thorns. There's all kinds of messages about this ministry, totally inappropriate. So we just got that complaint out. We hope that we will be able to stop that soon. And we would also point out that the sheriff's office needlessly jeopardizes taxpayer dollars because these kinds of unconstitutional actions expose the county to legal liability. And we cited a case out of Tennessee where the sheriff's office had to pay more than $40,000 in damages and attorney's fees for promoting religion on social media. The law now regards social media, governmental social media, as state action. They cannot use social media to promote religion.
You know, I used to do that when I was a Christian minister. We would go into jails in the U.S. and in Mexico to preach to a captive audience. That was our joke, to try to convert them to Christianity. And the wardens and the other workers there were happy to bring us in.
Well,
they thought it was good for the inmates.
And I hope you've been doing reverse penance for all of that. And
I should probably go to an atheist jail now or something for all of that. So the survey that came out, we want to talk about that briefly. We're going to be talking with the author of it in a minute, but we are celebrating a survey that's showing that the nones, which we call N-O-N-E-S, though those who are non-religious, non-affiliated, are here to stay. So Robert P. Jones will be our guest about that. But before we take a break, what?
We do want to say that this survey did show that the nones have stabilized. It was 24%, now it's 23%, but it's like 38% of young people. And we have seen the plummeting of white Christianity to 44%. And of those, only 14% are white evangelicals. So we're going to be asking Robbie more about his study. It shows so much information, not just about the non-religious, but the lessening of Christianity in the United States. But also, just a little advertisement that we now have the ability, you now have the ability to register for FFRF's 44th annual convention. We're one of the few national groups that have a convention this year in person. Fortunately, it was late in the year, and it's November 18th and 19th in Boston, and we have Gloria Steinem, Margaret Atwood, Steve Pinker. We have Hispanic freethinkers, David DeMaio. We have Catherine Stewart, author of The Power Worshippers. We have a powerhouse of speakers and activists and authors. Our own Andrew Seidel will be doing a workshop on Christian nationalism on January 6th. You don't want to miss this conference. Sikivu Hutchinson from Black Skeptics of LA will be getting a Freethought Heroine Award. Linda Greenhouse will be speaking about the Supreme Court and her new book about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Amy Coney Barrett. Steven Pinker, our honorary president, has a book that will be hot off the press on how to think rationally. So anyway, it'll be 2 days, and you can go to ffrf.org to our events and outreach link to sign up for the convention. Now there's a form, and there's all kinds of information, and the hotel
and about social distancing and COVID.
Well, there's not social distancing. This is not a socially distanced event. There is not mask wearing. Everybody who comes has to be vaccinated. And we, it'll be an in-person conference. It should be a great, I guess, quote unquote, post-pandemic bash, at least post-pandemic as we can be. And we'll be glad to see you there.
So we're going to take a break now. So stay tuned for some irreverent humor. We'll be hearing from Robin Williams and Phyllis Diller in just a couple of minutes. And then after that, we're going to talk with Robert P. Jones, the president of Public Religion Research Institute, author of the book White Too Long, about, as we just mentioned, PRRI's new 2020 census on religion. I'm Dan Barker with my co-host and co-president, Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And it's nice to be back in our own studio, isn't it? After more than a year of that kind of makeshift from home studio we had at our residence. But here we are back in the Free Thought Hall, the National Office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
In the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio. Stephen Yule died this year, very sadly, but he did live to see the studio and everything that he and his wife Diane helped us do here at Free Thought Hall.
Next Wednesday would have been the 70th birthday of the comedian Robin Williams. He was born July 21st, 1951. Nobody knows if Williams was a believer or a non-believer. He didn't talk much about his own personal religious views. However, he was certainly quite irreverent, and he never hesitated to criticize religion. In one of his comedy sketches, he gave a talk about Jesus.
And then there's another miracle. The night that Mary said to Joe, "Joe, I'm pregnant." And Joe went, "Holy Mother of God." And she went, "You're right."
Jesus Christ! What a great name, Joe! That is so much better than Shmuel. Way to go! I love you, Joe. Wait, hold on a minute, Mary. Hold on a minute. So I'm the stepfather of God's kid? Yeah. So I can't discipline him. I can't go, you're done wrong, because the kid will look at me and say, you're not my real dad. What are you doing, Mary? How did it happen? Oh, it's immaculate, Joe. Oh, it better be, Mary. It better be immaculate. I'm sorry, I'm transforming Joe into Ralph Cramden. But it seemed to be kind of appropriate because up to that point, all the names in the Bible are very Jewish. You have Noah, Moses, Zebedee, and then you get Mary and Joe. We are just a hyphen it away from Mary Jean and Joe Bob. We could have had Jim Bob, the son of God. Praise to him, Jim Bob, Jim Bob. And it said that night that Jesus turned to his disciples and said, one of you shall betray me. And Peter said, is it me, Jesus? And Jesus said, no, it is not you, Peter. And Simon said, is it me, Jesus? And Jesus turned to Simon and said, no, it is not you, Simon. And Judas said, is it me, Jesus? And Jesus turned to him and went, is it me, Jesus? Thus you see two traditions beginning, Jewish sarcasm and Gentile humor, together, born at that main moment. And the next day the miracle occurred, crucifixion, resurrection, and he rose again from the dead. And if he sees his shadow, another 2,000 years of guilt. Yes!
Another 2,000 years of guilt. He got that right. Another comedian who definitely was an atheist was Phyllis Diller, whose birthday anniversary is also this week. She was born July 17, 1917, and died in 2012 at the age of 95. Religion is such a medieval idea, she said. Don't get me started. I have thought about every facet of religion and I can't buy any of it. Not long before she died, Phyllis Diller was asked about her views on living a good life and her views on the afterlife.
What advice would you give me on how to live a good life?
How to live a good life?
Exactly.
Just make it the best thing you ever did and keep busy and be nice to people and, you know, keep an open mind.
Phyllis, at 95, does death scare you?
Oh, golly, no. See, I died three times.
Yeah, I remember that after your heart scare.
So I'm an expert. I'm good at it.
What's dying like for those of us who don't know?
It's very restful and peaceful, and there's nothing to it. You just pass out, and that's it. And with death, it's just that you don't wake up.
Do you go anywhere?
No, you don't go anywhere. So don't count on it, folks. I've known that for years. Don't count on going to heaven, because there ain't none.
Now, when did you come to that conclusion?
When I was very young, 3 years old.
Why was that?
I realized that it was a bunch of crap.
Well, now, Phyllis, I saw you on Biography doing a ghost story. Do you believe in ghosts?
Well, for the money they gave me, I did temporarily.
That was her trademark cackle for those of you who were too young to enjoy Phyllis Diller.
She's funny. So stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Robert P. Jones, the president of Public Religion Research Institute, who will tell us about PRRI's brand new, unprecedented 2020 census on religion.
With very good news for us nuns, none of the aboves, unaffiliateds.
We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Robert P. Jones is the CEO and the founder of Public Religion Research Institute, PRRI. He's a leading scholar, a commentator on religion and politics, and he is frequently featured in the major national media. He holds a PhD in religion from Emory University and an MDiv from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary.
Robert P. Jones is the author of the 2016 book, The End of White Christian America, and the 2020 book, White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. And by the way, that book just came out in paperback this week, and we've been selling it at FFRF's online shop.
And we talked with Robert Jones about that book a few months ago when the hardback came out.
Free Thought Radio and on our TV show, Free Thought Matters.
A great book. Last week, PRRI released their inaugural 2020 Census of American Religion, which is an impressive survey that gives unprecedented county-level data on religious identity and religious diversity in the United States. It provides the most detailed estimates of American religious affiliation since the U.S. Census Bureau last collected religious data in 1957. So I can call you Robbie?
Yes, please do.
So Robbie, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Oh, thanks. I'm really happy to be back.
So tell us about this survey. We saw your press release, but tell us how this came about.
Yeah, well, as you said, this is somewhat of unprecedented outside of the U.S. Census Bureau study. It's 7 years in the making. It's 500,000 interviews conducted with individual Americans over the last 7 years. And then at that level, we're able to make estimates for every county in the country in terms of its religious affiliation or non-affiliation. We have more than a dozen beautiful maps up on the website. If anybody wants to kind of take a look, you can kind of hover over the county and it'll kind of give you information about specific counties.
I saw that. And of course,
we're really excited about it.
The first thing I did, of course, is we went to our own county and looked at it. And besides counties, you also have it broken down by Black Protestants or Hispanic Catholics mm-hmm. or unaffiliated. How many different groups do you have there? Different maps.
You know, I think we've got a dozen different groups down to the county level, including the religiously unaffiliated in the country, who, as you know, make up nearly a quarter of Americans today. So that group is has been growing. We've seen it kind of leveling off, but we've got a county by county map of that as well.
So, of course, that's something of great interest to the listeners of Free Thought Radio, the stability of the nuns at almost one in four.
Nuns, N-O-N-E-S.
N-O-N-E-S. But, of course, you also point out, your survey shows that there's a shrinking white Christian majority. And so your survey really made a lot of news. So tell us more about that.
Sure. Well, these two trends are related to one another, and they really began in the 1990s. If we go back into the 1990s, the country's overwhelmingly white and Christian, more than two-thirds white and Christian. The religiously unaffiliated in the country are in single digits, 5-6%, depending on the survey that you look at. These trends have the growth of religiously unaffiliated or nuns has been kind of the story since the 1990s. Again, today it's nearly a quarter. That means that group has quadrupled in size just since the 1990s. So that's quite something. And then also we've seen a corresponding drop in the percentage of white Christians in the country. And those two trends are related. What we found is as people are leaving white Christian churches, they are disproportionately not stopping off on their way out the door, and they're not heading to another church. They are kind of heading away from church has been the general trend over the last few decades, and we've seen it accelerate in the last 10 years. So just to kind of show you how quickly things have been moving in the last 10 years, on the number of white Christians, say in 2008, when Barack Obama was running for president, was 54%. So that's the kind of American context he was first elected in. That number today is 44%. So it's been nearly a percentage point a year that the proportion of white Christians in the country has been dropping. And I think the big news in there is that the group that's driving that drop more than any other group are white evangelical Protestants. Now, that's not something you'd know from looking at the headlines. Right?
No, you certainly wouldn't.
How much ink they get in the headlines. But they have dropped, again, I've kind of used these same metrics from, being 21% of the population back in 2008 down to 14.5% of the population in 2020.
They certainly seem
that's quite
to,
dramatic.
Yes, it is. Excuse me.
Yeah,
they certainly seem to have disproportionate power, 14% of the population, and it seems like they control so many of the state houses.
Well, it's
so
historical,
on.
Isn't it? It's
right.
Lingering.
Yeah, and I think they do actually, it's notable that because they turn out to vote at higher rates than other Americans do, they do punch above their weight still at the ballot box. So in 2020, for example, they're 14.5% of the population, but they were 19% of voters. And because they overwhelmingly are active on one side of our partisan divide in the country, on the Republican side, they voted 84% for Donald Trump. And that's actually higher than they voted for him in 2016, I should say. They only voted 77% for him. So they both increased their vote share and are punching above their weight at the ballot box because of higher turnout rates. And because we had this two-party system, they make up a little more than a third of the Republican Party base. So they're still quite influential on the Republican side of the politics.
So in your survey, if I'm reading this right, within Christianity, it looks like white evangelicals are shrinking, but mainstream are actually picking up. Is that true, and is there a reason for that? Mainstream Christians.
I'll explain what that category is. So, if we're looking, in kind of the sociological circles, we typically divide up the religious landscape by both religious affiliation, kind of family groups of the denominations, and by race, because our country, churches are largely segregated by race still today. So inside of the kind of white Christian group, we basically have three groups: white evangelical Protestants, white mainline, or one way of thinking about them is also non-evangelical Protestants, and then white Catholics. And one part of the news is we talk about the decline of white evangelical Protestants. And historically, that has also been true of the white non-evangelical Protestants or mainline Protestants in the country. But we had this little surprise in the last survey of 2 years of modest uptick among that group. And that's the first time we've seen that in decades.
Yeah, that's true.
It is notable that we have 2 years of data now where they have kind of stopped declining and actually ticked up. And a little clue here is that their median age has also gone down as they've tipped up a little bit. So they've actually done the thing that's been very hard for any white Christian groups to do, and that is pick up young people over the last couple of years.
So, Robbie, to put this in context, how many Christians overall are they, regardless of race? What's the percentage of Christians in the United
Christians
States?
Overall, yeah. Yes. So it's notable that the country, while it is becoming more diverse, is still essentially two-thirds Christian.
Yeah, so...
In the country today. Yeah, if you count every denomination, every racial and ethnic group, it's about two-thirds Christian.
But isn't it true that the nuns, the non-affiliated people are, if you were to lump them and call them a denomination, aren't the nuns still the largest affiliation?
Yeah, that's correct. We have a big pie chart right at the top of the report, and where we divide up, white evangelicals, white mainliners, white Catholics, and then African American Protestants, et cetera. Jews, Hindus, and then we have, the religiously unaffiliated. And when you kind of, if you were looking at this pie chart 10 feet away, the biggest slice you'd see is that 23%, nearly a quarter, that are religiously unaffiliated is bigger than any other pie slice in the chart.
And of course, you would remember the days when the Roman Catholic was usually solidly at 24%. They've dipped down to 19%?
So yes, and you have to kind of put two groups together here, and we divide them up by race and ethnicity. So white Catholics, yes, are 12% of the population. Latino Catholics are 8, right? So if you put them both together, they're about 20%, but that's down a few points. And what's really down is white Catholics, right? The only reason why they're anywhere near 20%. Today is because the attrition among white Catholics has been matched by a growth from Latino Catholics in the country. But white Catholics have gone, from being, again, kind of go back to 2006 or so, they've gone from being 16 down to under 12 percent of the population.
So, Robbie, before we go to the break, I wondered if we could look at some of the other figures about the nuns. Could you tell us more about, for example, breakdown in Democrats and Republicans? Do you have that handy?
Yeah, that's great. And age is really important here too. But I'll give you a little bit about that. So it's notable that as the nuns have increased over the past couple of decades, they have been incorporated very differently into our two political parties. Now, they have grown in both political parties, worth saying. So I'll kind of use 2006 to 2020 again. In the Republican Party in 2006, only 4% of Republicans were religiously unaffiliated. Now, that number has tripled by 2020. It's now 13%. Democrats, who started higher in 2006, 9% of Democrats, it's about 1 in 10, were religiously unaffiliated, and it's doubled more than doubled, actually, to 23% today. So Democrats have about the same proportion of religiously unaffiliated people in their midst as the general population, while Republicans are really down by half compared to the general population.
We see that in our surveys of our own group. The Republicans in our organization are a smaller group.
Barely there. But the other thing that I thought was fascinating, Robbie, was the tremendous growth of unaffiliated among non-white populations, where your survey is showing 72% of Black Americans. I'm doing it backwards. That there's tremendous growth among unaffiliation among Blacks, Latinos, but the biggest growth, or I guess you would see, with the Asian Americans and Pacific Islander Americans, correct?
Yeah, it's interesting that we see there's no racial or ethnic group that has like minuscule numbers of unaffiliated people. I think that's really worth saying. The ones that look about like the general population. So again, the general population number in our latest survey here is 23%. White Americans, right on that, 23%. African Americans, I think people think of as, and are a very religious group, nonetheless, 21%. Unaffiliated Native Americans, 28%. Multiracial Americans, 34%, a third there. Even Latino Americans, I think, again, who people think of as overwhelmingly religious constituency many times, it's 19% unaffiliated. And then, as you note, a little more than a third, 34% of Asian or Pacific Islanders are religiously unaffiliated. And on the other end of the spectrum, among that group, it's notable, also about 3 in 10 are non-Christian. Even if they're religious, they're non-Christian. So the number of non-Christians is roughly at parity with the number of Christians among AAPI Americans.
So we just got a bonanza of information here from PRRI's new 2020 Census of American Religion. We are talking with the CEO and founder of PRRI, Robert P. Jones. And I think when we come back, Robbie, You wanted to talk a little bit about the connection about race and the pushback on critical race theory, more statistics on where white Christians fall on that.
So we have to take a break here. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. We're continuing our conversation with Robert P. Jones, the CEO of Public Religion Research Institute, author of The End of White Christian America and White Too Long. We're talking about their new survey, the 2020 Census of American Religion. And Robbie, it's really fun looking at these maps. I'm looking at this one right now. I printed out Religious Diversity Index. You can click on your county and see how religiously diverse your county is. And as I look at the map, there's this huge kind of light swath in Mississippi and Alabama, which is not very religiously diverse, I suppose.
Yeah, so we want to kind of switch, Robbie. We see a strong connection between white Christians and Republicans. I'm wondering if you can give us some insight on their pushback against critical race theory.
Well, you know, there's a great piece, actually, that Philip Bump in the Washington Post did, kind of using our data and looking. And basically, the headline of the piece is, if you want to know how your county voted in the last presidential election, all you need to know is how many white Christians there were in your county. It's the correlations are that strong. And, and I should note here that I'm not just talking about white evangelical Christians. Those are the ones that get all the headlines, as we've discussed. And they voted 84% for former President Trump in 2020. But what often gets left out is that the other two major groups of white Christians, white mainline Protestants and white Catholics, both voted nearly 6 in 10 for Trump in both 2016 and 2020, right? So that's all white Christian groups together. And there is this kind of what I think is really a kind of ethno-religious identity that's become wrapped up in partisanship, in Republican partisanship. And it explains one of the reasons why we're seeing this discourse on, and I want to make sure I don't call it a debate on critical race theory. It really is a one-sided propaganda campaign, frankly, to kind of insert criticism of critical race theory, into the political discourse. But at root, what it really is about, I think this is really important for understanding, it really is about it's kind of a coordinated propaganda movement that's reacting to the moment of reckoning on racial justice that that's happening in the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's an attempt to protect power by preempting an honest reading of the history of our country, and I should add, and our churches, right? And we just see this connection, and we see, for example, all six presidents of Southern Baptist seminaries circle the wagons and put out a statement, didn't define what it is, but put out a statement condemning critical race theory as incompatible with the Baptist faith and message, which is the thing that every seminary professor has to sign to teach those seminaries. So it really is about kind of preventing the next generation of clergy from even knowing this history. And because they know that if they do, it's going to shine, speaking the word critical, a very critical light on their own history, on Southern Baptist history, on white Christian history. This really is about protecting really a version of white Christian America that they feel slipping from the sea.
And I'd like to just interject, Robbie, that you're saying this is somebody who came out of the Southern Baptist tradition yourself, correct?
No, that's right. I grew up Southern Baptist. I went to a Southern Baptist seminary and a Southern Baptist college. Most of my family is still Southern Baptist. I mean, you know, and this is, and part of my own journey really has been disentangling the ways that really this vision of white Christian ownership of America, right, has so been just integrated into the DNA. I mean, the other word for that is white supremacy, of course, right? Has been integrated into the DNA of Christianity, and you know, hopefully, doing some work that will help white Christians disentangle them from that commitment, and that will end up with healthier churches and a healthier democracy as a result of it.
And that's what your 2020 book is all about: White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. Again, just available in paperback this week.
So, Robbie, does your new paperback have any addition about January 6th?
It does. It has a new afterword in it that reflects kind of on the book, the research in the book, and connects it up to what we saw in the 2020 election, and in particular what we saw in the insurrection on January 6th with this sea of Christian, you know, flags and symbols right there with all the white supremacist flags and of course, the Trump flags.
Well, I can't wait to read that epilogue.
The afterword, yeah.
The afterword.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it's pretty clear. I mean, if you're just looking at it without any religious bias, it's pretty clear what was going on there. They were praying. They were they had these big signs for Jesus, and you know, it was kind of like a religious revival service combined with violence. It was surreal.
Yeah, well, it's troubling. You know, recent surveys we found that as many as a quarter of white evangelicals not only believe many of these kind of conspiracy theories around, you know, that Trump really won the election, that he'll be restored to the presidency, but a quarter of white evangelicals actually say they support violence, that the country, they believe the country's gotten so off track that true American patriots are going to have to resort to violence. And so that's a quarter of a very, you know, kind of old and mainstream religion that has gotten, you know, a foothold, that those conspiracy theories have gotten such a foothold that they're, you know, ready to do things like we saw on January 6th.
Well, there is a hymn called Onward Christian Soldiers. I guess
Well, thank you so much, Robert P. Jones, CEO of Public Religion Research Institute and author of White Too Long.
And look up that religious 2020 census from PRRI.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Oh, thanks. Always glad to be here.
Thank you, Grant Blaschka, for engineering. And thank you, listeners in Philadelphia and New Jersey, listeners in Madison, Wisconsin, in Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR, in Bryan, Texas, to KEOS, in Columbia, Missouri, to KOPN, listeners to KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, a pretty new station there for us. Also new for us is KZSM in San Marcos, Texas. In Vermont and New Hampshire, WOOL. And in New York, Ithaca area, WRFI. If you're listening to us on the podcast, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your friends to visit our radio show at ffrf.org/radio.
If you're a member of FFRF already, thank you. If you are not, we'd love to send you information, including a complimentary issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Go to our website at ffrf.org. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.